science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yes, it is interesting. Alan, how are you?
I am very well, Lillian. As I said, I'm pumped. I'm excited.
Pumped. I mean, okay. Should we start with the international? Can we do that first?
We can, but I was going to start with something even before that.
But you were pumped. If you're pumped about this first story, I don't know.
No, I'm not pumped about the story. I'm pumped about the fact Ben Folds is playing in Auckland next Monday at the power station. There you go. So that's what I'm pumped about.
That's science, Alan.
So if your tastes run to Elton John and Billy Joel, and I know they're absolute anathema to a student radio station, if you like your piano ballads, then go and see Ben Folds because he's bloody good.
Okay.
There you go.
There we go. All right, we're pumped about that.
Right.
What are we not pumped about, first story?
What are we not pumped about? Well, asparagus. Mm. Okay, so a recent, like last week, paper in Nature, which is the bastion of good science, says that if you have breast cancer, if you're unfortunate enough to have breast cancer, then the thing to do is to cut out foods that contain an amino acid called asparagine from your diet. And one of the foods that contains high levels of asparagine is asparagus. So what happened was that these guys did a study with mice, as they often do in these cases, and they found that the mice who had breast cancer, the bad thing about breast cancer obviously is once it metastasizes and goes into other parts of the body, then it becomes sort of untreatable. So you want to try and keep it localized. And what they found was that asparagine, this amino acid, seems to allow the tumors to metastasize.
And faster or just
Well, just metastasize and go elsewhere in the body. So which is definitely not what you want. So what they did was two things. They reduced the amount of asparagine in the diet of these mice, and they also treated the mice with a drug called asparaginase, which decomposes asparagine and turns it into sort of harmless stuff. And in both cases, they found that the spread of the tumors was pretty much halted, certainly reduced enormously anyway. So by keeping that out of their diet, it made a real difference. Now, what it didn't do was to cure the original cancer in the first place, okay? So this isn't a cure, but it's something that will stop the metastasizing of the tumor cells and spreading and, leading to bad outcomes, which it often does.
So the asparagus only worsens the cancer. It doesn't give you breast cancer.
No. That's the thing. And again, I've sort of looked at this on a few news sites, and they're saying that, yes, asparagus gives you cancer. No, it doesn't.
That's not it.
No,
okay.
It's not it. Once you've got it, it slows its progress, basically, or halts its progress, and it keeps it localized. So therefore, sort of radical surgery like mastectomies and stuff like that have a better chance of succeeding if it hasn't gotten to your lymph nodes and, all of those sort of places where it tends to go into the bloodstream, et cetera, et cetera. So, this is kind of interesting stuff. This was done by the Cancer Research UK division in Cambridge. So, you can pretty much hang your hat on that, presumably. And, very, very interesting stuff. Now, again, obviously, this is only on mice models. So they've only done this on mice. They haven't done this on human trials or anything like that. But it's obviously something that now is in the pipeline. They'll be looking at human trials for this, I would imagine, looking for volunteers, probably with sort of advanced breast cancer or whatever, and see whether this actually works. So, it's nice. This fight against this nasty bloody disease, cancer, it's just ongoing and ongoing and ongoing. And every week you hear of, cures or possible cures or whatever. There's an awful, awful lot of people
working
investing
on it.
An awful, awful, awful lot of time, in trying to just stop this. And one day we will. I'm damn sure we will. But, it may be a while off. We need to understand really the molecular basis of cancer, and once we can do that and once we can target cancer cells absolutely specifically, then we'll be onto something.
Do they inject the mice with the cancer?
Yeah, basically they give them cancer in the first place. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah, mice are cute. I know. It's tough. Mm. There's there's really no other alternative at this stage. Maybe in years to come we can do all sort of computer modelling and stuff like that, but, so that would occupy a whole hour, I think, sort of a discussion of the pros and cons of animal studies, et cetera, et cetera.
Perhaps another week.
Yeah.
What's the, is this only breast cancer or is it any kind of cancer?
They've only looked at breast cancer at the moment, okay?
So it's not necessarily going to affect men, is that correct?
No, men can get breast cancer. Yeah. I've got a mate.
I did not know that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, a friend of mine got breast cancer. It was, you know, and... it's a hell of a thing to go and tell people that you've got breast cancer when you're a guy.
It's super uncommon either. Yeah, so there's a misconception that it's... Mm. Yeah.
That's interesting. You think that there'd be more awareness around that because there's a number of sort of breast cancer awareness ads targeted at women.
Yes, which by, you know, and obviously that's the majority of people who get it. But, you know, you're right. You can get it if you're a guy and it's not that uncommon.
Yeah. Right. New definitions of moles.
Oh, yes, indeed. Here we go.
I don't know what the original definition
Shame
of
on
a mole.
You, Lillian. Goodness me. Will, definition of the mole?
Just gonna nod.
Okay, I apologise for this one in advance because it is a little bit geeky, but it's very important to the chemists in the world. So, where do we start? Right, we've got units. We've got units. So... for example, we've got the unit of time, which is the second. Okay, we've got the unit of length, which is the meter. And we've got the unit of mass, which is the kilogram. The unit of electric current, which is the ampere.
I'm following.
The unit of luminous intensity, brightness, which is the candela. There's one more that I've missed. The unit of temperature, which is the Kelvin. And there's one more, and that's the unit of a thing called amount of substance. And that unit is the mole. Now, anybody who has studied sixth form, as it used to be in my day, but now it's year 12. God. Chemistry would know what a mole is or should know what a mole is. Okay?
I didn't.
You didn't.
Study at sixth form. No. I did at fifth form.
Okay, so the analogy that we use when we're teaching this sort of stuff is... we're talking about really, really small things. Atoms, molecules, things like that. Tiny, unimaginably small, okay? Mm. We know the mass of them really quite accurately. They're around about 10 to the minus 24 of a kilogram. You know, just ridiculously small, beyond our comprehension small. But what we do in the lab is that we don't work on those tiny scales. We work in gram scales. When you're doing a chemical reaction, we're going to weigh out 6 grams of that, 4 grams of that, blah de blah de blah. And in that mass, we've got to know the number... of atoms or molecules, because we know that they're going to react in a 1-to-1 or a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 ratio or whatever, okay? So we need to know the number of atoms or molecules in a 1 gram sample, something like that. And the way that we do that is we use a thing called the mole. And the basis of the mole at the moment is the number of atoms that are in exactly 12 grams of the carbon isotope 12C.
Definitely got that.
Yeah, well, you and many other first year chemistry students, okay? But that is a particular number, okay? And the number is humongously big. 6.022 times 10 to the 23. That's what one mole is. 6 by 10 to the 23 anythings constitutes a mole of that anything, okay?
Right.
So one mole of carbon weighs 12 grams and it contains... 6.022 times 10 to the 23 carbon atoms. Okay.
So carbon is sort of the base of this measurement.
Yeah, good.
Just like how you'd say a kg is 1 litre of water.
Exactly the same sort of thing, okay?
Science.
Good. So this is the basis of the mole. So as I say, one mole of carbon weighs 12 grams. One mole of carbon dioxide weighs 44.01 grams. One mole of oxygen weighs 32 grams, etc. But they all contain the same number of atoms/molecules. So that's the definition that's used currently, and now they're going to have a new definition.
We just got it!
No.
We just got it.
I know you just got it, but now it's easier because they're just saying, right, one mole is 6.022140.76 times 10 to the 23 anything.
Oh, it's way easier.
So you don't have to worry about the 12 grams of carbon and stuff anymore. This is going to make life way easier for your average student and stuff like that.
We just need to know that the number is the same all the time.
Yeah, so there you go.
And they're not changing the number.
No, they've changed the number just a wee smidge.
They have changed.
Yeah, they have. And it's not going to make a blind bit of difference to anybody's life, but you know, I'm going to have to rewrite the section of my textbook, you know, about what a mole is and everything like that.
You're secretly excited though, aren't you?
This is chemistry in action, folks. You know, this is good stuff. So.
Data science has turned into like a lecture series. We're actually really learning stuff here.
I do go away from my show, you know, like the show, I go away and I teach people. I'm like, hey, I learned this today.
Good. Good.
I mean, it is helpful though, right? You are correcting and you're challenging yourself. Science is growing. It's being like, actually this, I mean, not that it was wrong. No, it was just saying this is an easier way of.
Well, so at the moment, all of these units, except for the kilogram and the mole, are defined not in terms of physical objects. Okay. So the kilogram is defined in terms of a physical object. There's a piece of platinum alloy in France, which is a perfect sphere, and it weighs exactly 1 kilogram. And so every weight on the planet is referenced back to this platinum sphere in a bank vault in France, which weighs 1 kilogram. Now, the trouble with that is that over the past century or so, since it's been there, its mass has changed a little bit because there's stuff in the air and everything, and so now it's sort of gained a tiny, tiny little bit of mass.
Wow.
Now, so you don't want to have your basis of mass as being a physical object whose mass can change. Mm. So now they're going to redefine the kilogram as well in terms of other reference points, yes, which aren't then based on physical objects. So
this is why I love the metric system, because they're all so pedantic about it, and then in the US they're using imperial.
Oh no, the metric system rocks, it really does. And the sooner that those three countries, which are, who don't use it,
I want to say Great Britain, but I feel like they do use metric.
No, they're kind of half and half. They can't make up their minds. They still do their motorways and stuff and miles and everything, but they do their masses and kilograms and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's the USA, obviously, is the biggie, and Liberia and Burma/Myanmar don't use the metric system. So there's only three countries in the world that don't, and they all really should, because it is very simple.
But then again, you could probably argue that NASA and all them are using metric because it's
NASA. Yeah, now that's the nice example of the whole metric thing, because they had a Mars Climate Orbiter spacecraft way back when, in the 90s, and it crashed into Mars because one of the team was using imperial measurements and the other team was using metric measurements for the thrust to work out their thrust.
Seems a little bit unprofessional.
So when it's coming down to land on the surface, they buggered up their thrust units, and so it just went bang.
Oh my god!
And that was a few million down the tubes. That was all because of units.
We need more sound effects like that. Oh,
wow!
So there you go. Units are useful.
Very important. Okay, last one. Yep. International Year of the Periodic Table.
Well, there's really not much to say about this. Next year has been deemed by the UN the International Year of the Periodic Table. The periodic table, the basis of everything.
Okay.
Everything. So, yeah. There's nothing on planet Earth or in the universe that doesn't involve the periodic table.
Because I was going to ask, why are we having a year? Is this celebrating it, or is it, you know, raising awareness about the periodic table?
Both. Okay, so it'll be 150 years since a Russian guy by the name of Mendeleev came up with this idea of the periodic table, and he said, right, you've got these elements, these indivisible things that you can't break down into anything simpler. So elements like hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, blah, blah, blah. And he put them in some sort of order, and then he found that, if you line them up like that, then what you find is that this element behaves like this one, and this one behaves like this one. And so he put them in an order, and his was the basis of the periodic table that we know and love today. And so now there's 118 elements that are known to humanity, and there may be more, we don't know. We're trying to make more at the moment. So it's 150 years since he did that, and it's 350 years since the first discovery, the first documented discovery of an actual element.
Wow, that's a while ago.
So back in the day, like if you go into the Bible, they talk about brimstone. Mm. Brimstone is, anybody?
Nope.
Sulfur. Okay. So brimstone, sulfur, so carbon, iron, copper, silver, gold, all of those things, they were known to ancients. So the ancients knew that. So we don't know when they were first discovered. But we do know that the first element that was discovered, that was actually isolated, was phosphorus.
Mm.
Okay. And this was a guy by the name of Henning Brandt in 1669, I guess it would have been. And he got it by distilling urine.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about phosphorus, you've possibly seen it, that you've got to keep it underwater because as soon as it comes out from water, it just spontaneously bursts into flame. It's amazing stuff.
What?
Yeah, that's why they put it in bombs. It's nasty stuff.
Okay.
Because it spreads over everywhere. Once it lands on the skin, you can't put it out with water or anything like that. You've got to cover it with sand. It's really, yeah, it's nasty. So napalm is a mixture of phosphorus and sort of diesel fuel and stuff like that. Very, very nasty stuff. But 150th anniversary of the periodic table. So next year,
2019.
There'll be periodic table t-shirts.
Are we going to sing the song? Should we sing the song every week or something?
That's a very good song. Tom Lehrer, a classic. Yeah. Yes, a classic. One.
Are you going to get the table tattooed on you somewhere to celebrate?
What a good idea. What a good idea. I never even thought of that.
You just put it on your forearm. You can reference it whenever you
I might just stick with the song.
I mean, that would be cool. You can't get much cooler than the periodic table.
That is going to be a sting.
I dare someone to text in and name something cooler than the periodic table.
Yeah,
texted in though and said that American drug dealers use the metric system. I want to know how they know that.
I have heard that actually.
I mean, it makes sense.
The water analogy was awesome, but then you instantly evaporated it.
Okay.
All right, tattoos. Yeah, you're going to get one, Will?
I don't think I'll get a small atom or something. I don't know.
I'll do
something. We've got a year to plan. That's right.
That's true. You know, it's never enough. So you can't plan this too far in advance. So.
Thank you for coming in, Alan. We'll talk to you next week.
Cool. Thanks.
All right.
That was Dear Science.